Hospitalitychain.com, the world's first online hub designed for the hospitality, culinary, and catering industry. From leading food and beverage brands to professional food service equipment, Hospitalitychain.com makes sourcing simple. Search, select, buy direct, and save all in one global marketplace. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Fell Into Food Podcast. I am your host, Chef Jeff Fell, and joining me today is the chairman of the ACF Chicago Division, Don Zajac. So, Don, thanks for coming on today.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
So, we're just going to actually cook and play and do what we love to do best. Fantastic. So, you know, maybe we'll explain what we got going on here and what you're planning on doing. We got, a whole host of things that we're just going to cook and teach and talk about. I'm really, really excited about. So, maybe give just a quick, 30,000 foot view of yourself and in your background. I mean, after I read it, you've done about every line that there is, commercial, non-com, hotel, you name it. So maybe just a quick 30,000 foot first, and then we'll dig into cooking.
Yeah, so I've been in the business 43 plus years. So been around for a little bit, graduate of the program at Joliet Junior College like yourself.
Yep.
And it's been... just a great thing. I really enjoyed my career. Started from humble beginnings going to junior college, and then again eventually into the Joliet Junior College for Culinary Arts. And I've worked for some really great chefs and have great opportunities. I've seen anywhere from healthcare to the country clubs to more chic-y hotels. Mm-hmm. Casino, helped open up Empress Casino in Joliet. And
oh, really? Awesome.
Yeah, and that was an experience unto itself, a good experience, but just the sheer volume.
Oh,
and
the
whole different mindset. And at the time, they were so cutting edge for where they're at in the industry. But love everything about this business. 40 plus years, you would think, right?
Right. And then what led you into, ultimately your position with the ACF?
So I've been a part, we were really encouraged at school to be a part of the ACF. And from that point, back when I graduated in 86, but the faculty was very pro-ACF. And I've been with it ever since in various capacities. And it offers, when people say, well, what does the ACF do for you?
Yeah.
And that's a problem that, we have or a challenge that we have nowadays in trying to recruit membership. What's in it for me? And it's I can say what it's done for me is my testimony that it offers a great opportunity to network, to learn, always very pro-educational. Our chapter is very pro-educational. And you never stop learning, and it just really feeds the hunger, even to the point of myself working with the Joliet Junior College Hot Food Competition Team as they go into nationals. And it keeps you alive. Even somebody at my age, my experience, you never stop learning. And it's just a great opportunity within the ACF to keep pushing yourself forward.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So I'm going to explain kind of what I got going on and then and kind of what some of the stuff you brought. So
I'm really excited to see this beef because following you through your podcast and your YouTube, it's been a great follow. So I'm really excited.
So dry age, I mean, most people know that, I love being introduced to the Medico dry aging units, brand new from Italy coming to the United States.
Yeah.
Longest time there's only been one player and now you got some competition. It's really cool. I didn't know anything. Like you said, learning and continuing to learn. I didn't know much about dry aging. I didn't go that route to fine dining and do any of that kind of stuff. So when I got a chance, it was like bookworm, like read everything, watch everything. And I want to bring that education more because there's not enough about what it is and what it can do. So what I've got here is half of a top loin strip that's been dry aged for 35 days. And you can see obviously, the pellicle on the outside, and then you still got great looking beef on the inside, bone in, obviously more protection around greater pellicle. Actually did a shoot earlier today and, this whole beef, we lost about 2 pounds of just natural weight from 14 to 12 and then, took off another almost 3 pounds from the other half of just bone and excess. So, people wonder why is dry aged beef so expensive? Well, when you look at it,
the whole process,
the yield at the end in the time, you're only going to yield maybe 60%.
When you look at the vendors, say in this area, Meats by Lint, Allen Brothers, Whittingham, and they've really invested a lot into dry age. Allen Brothers has a Himalayan salt room exclusively for, you know, the aging process. And again, what the other vendors have done just speaks to the want and the need.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, I think too, the more educated we are, the better we can handle the protein and make it the best of what it is.
Yep.
Because it is different. It has that little bit of sourness, that little bit of tang to it.
Earthy, nutty.
Yeah.
And depending on how far you go, right? Some of these salt rooms, I mean, there's, I think, a place on the East Coast, they do 100 day, which is like, you know, like the crazy far end of it. We may try that with some of our cuts, but,
yeah.
You know, I found about 40 days is just perfect for me. Between, once you hit 40, 45, I think it starts to really get to another level of flavor.
Yeah.
And I think that's a palate. I always explain it as like wine, right? You don't usually start off with that dry wine straight away. You're starting with the sweet and then you work your way to dry. And I think beef's kind of the same way. So all I'm doing is kind of taking off the bones, this outer pellicle, so that way we can cut it down into steaks. So, you know, that's what I'm doing here. And then maybe you want to talk about while I'm working on this, kind of what you're going to be working on, and then we can just keep the conversation rolling.
Yeah. So what I brought here today, and kind of ironic, but I'm in love with even though shiitake mushroom is my my favorite mushroom. I have this lion's mane, and it's, you know, it's the hottest thing right now, the lion's mane mushroom. And like your speaker had on your show, you know, there's six different types of this lion's mane alone. And then we're going to saute a little bit of farm-raised Atlantic salmon. I've got a potato pavé. And then I've got a little gastrique here with some pomegranate molasses and a little dill oil.
Okay.
You know, just some simple but upscale. And, you know, one of the things I wanted to show... even though it come from a, you know, classical background, you know, more French than anything else, you don't necessarily need those sauces, you know, those heavier sauces to go with it. And, you know, just speaking to, you know, just a healthier way of eating in today's want and market, that we don't have to go with the big hollandaise or a bechamel or, you know, a heavier butter sauce. Whether you're making a beurre blanc or a beurre battu or, you know, something more, a little bit more classic. So, you know, something wonderful for summer, and it's something that people can also make at home.
Awesome. Very cool. So, you know, obviously I'm trying to get as close to that edge without damaging the meat, you know, working my way around the bone. Obviously a butcher shop's going to have bandsaws and the whole nine yards that make this process a little easier. So, you know, I'm navigating my way the best I can through, you know, taking these bones off without really damaging any of that meat. And then what we've done is actually we've already started sous vide-ing, you know, traditional cooking method, with proteins, lots of stuff. So I've got a water bath with a couple of these just to kind of speed up the process. I just find it's a great, like, I don't have time. I don't want to worry about, is my steak going to be where I want it? You know, you set it, let it go, and it does its thing. So really excited for that. So I'm going to cut this tail off too.
And for those who don't know, or you know, again, we're always learning. I don't know that I would want to use the bone in making a stock just because of the age and, you know, the sourness of it. So you do lose a little bit of that, but there is the plus as far as the taste and the quality of the meat, and you know, obviously you've got a great muscle there, it'll speak up for itself. But there are certain concessions that you have to make when you are going this direction. But I think the end result is worth what you're going to wind up with.
Yeah, I did an event, and we did this and some ribeye, and got it. It was a 40 day, and just the quality of the meat was just, it was out of this world.
Fork tender.
It's like buttermelt in your mouth. And we're going to see that today. You know, when we cut into these, you know, 35 days, you're still going to get that butter in your mouth. So I'm excited because when I, you know, you wait 30, 40 days for a round of beef. And then when you finally get to eat it, it's just finally I get to go at it. So I don't know if you got any prep to start on.
Yeah. So I'm going to start on this onion for our risotto.
Okay. Yeah. You know, and us talking about, you know, both JJC alums, you know, I've talked about it before about, you know, culinary school really gives, I think, a good foundation for those that are really curious about the industry. You know, I had no background. I was 24 and I'm like, I'm going to go to culinary school, but I didn't know where to start. And, you know, it was great because JJC was affordable.
Yeah.
And to be honest, they have some of the top chefs in the nation.
Yeah.
I mean, if you really think about, you know, who's there and what they've accomplished, it's incredible.
Yeah. You know, and faculty right now alone, they have two master chefs, Chef Bucci and Chef Chobana. And, you know, great guys and very current, moving the program forward. But it's a little story about myself and Joliet. I had been going to junior college out in the south suburbs, and I had wanted to go to Joliet, and they had over a 200-person waiting list.
Wow!
And so I'm like, well, I don't want to stop going to school because, you know, I didn't want to be that person that stopped and never went back. So I went to Illinois State, and in the process, I would call Chef Stober, who was the head of the program at the time, and I would, you know, ask him, you know, where am I at on the list? And make a long story short, after a period of time, and me, I literally called him every day. He finally, you know, I could tell the story now, but he pushed me through to the top of the list, and I was in the program. But, you know, they really do a great job out there. We're very fortunate in this area to have schools like, you know, Joliet and College of DuPage and Kendall. Yeah. And it really, we're very, again, very blessed. And I would put any of those schools up against the likes of CIA, Johnson & Wales, French Culinary. But I think, you know, in the end, you know, it's, you know, doing stuff like this, and it's about people really, it's the people inside, right? Motiva, move from within. Because you can have the greatest instructors, but if you don't have if the person receiving that information doesn't have the passion or the desire or the want, that where's that information going to go?
Right.
And so I really think it's a testament too to the students and what they're wanting to derive from the experience.
All right. So I got these cut up. You know, 1 to 1.5 inch. You know. So, I mean, you check out the marbling on this meat. I mean, it's just absolutely incredible. And this is from Fisher Farms down in Southern Indiana, more regenerative type farming.
Sure.
Pretty cool story they've got going there, working on some really big stuff with the USDA in their agricultural program. So, you know, big thanks to them for the beef for today. So I'm going to actually get these steaks set aside. But again, you know, this will run you, you know, anywhere from 80 to 90 easily. You know, if you go into a traditional steakhouse, yeah, you're paying way
more. What's your yield off of a ribeye?
That's what I've got to do. So I did one ribeye originally, but it was bone out. So I don't think I was going to get good results because there was a ton of loss because there was no protection from the bone on the bone side.
Sure.
So actually next week, the goal is to get some yield results on that ribeye and see where we actually land, you know, at that 40-day mark.
And what's nice, you know, too, about doing this stuff, Chef, is that, you know, you do have that market out there that will spend that money on that steak.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's not something, I don't know, that people are wanting to buy or have every week. I think it's more of a special thing. But, you know, when you want a steak, you want a nice steak. You know, and so you're willing to make that investment and into something like this.
Right.
And you know, the end result is going to be absolutely delicious.
So I'm going to put those in the cooler for now and get my beef board and get a regular board up here so that way we can so help you do some more of this other prep. So maybe talk about the process of risotto again. What I like to do, or what I'm trying to do with podcasts, is not just for the professionals in the industry, because most of us know these type of things, but the people at home that are watching, the regular everyday person, and you know, they're so intimidated by some of this home cooking.
Yeah.
And again, I think that's the big trend this year, is kind of elevated home cooking, or just really good home cooking, because it's almost unaffordable to go out to eat anymore. You know, so maybe talk a little bit about how easy it really is to make something like a risotto. They hear that word and they instantly go, I can't make something like that. That's just too difficult.
And then, you know, you see I'm not a big fan of Food Network, but you know, you watch a show like Top Chef, and you know, what's the Achilles is always the risotto somehow, some way. But, you know, you have to think that those shows are a TV production. They're not, they're edited, and they're, they're coached, and so it's a little bit more of a challenge than just making risotto. But as far as the risotto itself, it's a basic risottos are often made the same as far as you're going to start off by sauteing. Thanks, Chef. Mm-hmm. You're going to be sauteing some of your little aromatics. We've got garlic here. We've got onion. We'll have a little bit of oil and butter in the pan. And then we'll toast our risotto. And it's really important to add a hot stock. So, and whether you're making your stock at home or you're getting some of the modern conveniences that you could buy now online, whether it be Amazon or Whole Foods, but it's really important that you have your stock hot. And then you're incorporating it slowly at a time, and getting that creaminess, and then it's magic, And then adding your cheese, really important to add your cheese last, not in the cooking process. So once you know your risotto is finished,
yep.
Then you're adding it to the cheese to the risotto.
What's a little tip somebody should look for? They go out to eat and they order the risotto. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm always hesitant because is it going to be under? Is it going to be over?
Yeah.
You play that Russian roulette almost like a piece of chicken, nowadays in a restaurant. So what's something to look for, or maybe even ask the waiter before you even order?
I think, too, with the risotto that, and especially in a restaurant setting, it's cooked ahead of time. It's so-called, it's blanched, if you will. And so what that means, it's about halfway cooked, so they're finishing it. The line cook is finishing it in the restaurant for you to have, the risotto. And if it's, oftentimes the staff, hopefully the server's not throwing the cook under the bus, so to speak, as could happen sometimes. But it's just having a rapport with your server, and how's the risotto tonight, and depending on, it could be a seafood risotto, mushroom risotto,
right.
And ask them, if it's a mushroom risotto, what kind of mushrooms are they using? Again, my personal favorite is a shiitake, but you might have a favorite mushroom and ask them too. Hey, if you had like an oyster mushroom, could you put some oyster mushrooms in there?
Yeah.
So, but it's, those restaurants that you want a restaurant that does it all the time, that just throws it on special. That more or less have their name on baking risotto.
All right, so if you want to get that pan heated up, just push that button right here. These little fancy pans, so whatever temperature you want to set, we can get exact with our Breville over there.
I think with the risotto too, a little bit goes a long way because, it's so rich.
Right.
And I think, oftentimes, they look into, people look at quantity instead of quality, and then while they're eating the risotto, they're like, my goodness, I don't even know if I could finish all this. So we're just going to heat up our fat here a little bit before we throw in the risotto. And then again, we also have by the use of the Irinox machine, we also have the stock that's hot already.
Yes.
So we'll just incorporate that slowly into it, and use about an 8-to-1 ratio, meaning 8 parts stock to 1 part of the risotto. So I'm a ratio kind of person.
Yeah.
So no matter if you're cooking for, because I work with some at some high volume accounts, so you're doing thousands of people. And the question is, how do you do that? And I'm like, well, it's whether you're doing 10, 100, or 1,000, the principles are the same. So
yeah, I think
you stick to those ratios and just keep that in mind.
Yeah, I think something else that'd be really good for people, like, I guess, young culinarians. I think one of the turning points in my career was when I had to do bulk cooking. Mm-hmm. And like you said, literally feeding 1,000 to 2,000 people a night, as the main prep cook. That's a lot of work. You learn real quick how to utilize equipment, and it actually makes you more efficient on the line. I learned on the line, but that's all minute, one at a time.
Yeah.
Now you're cooking for thousands, and you can really learn how to, those tips and tricks of how to speed up the process. So I'm going to cut up a little bit of parsley here just for...
You put that in for garnish?
Yeah, just for a little garnish. Save the rest for later for some other dishes. Something else I want to mention too about like the dry aged steak is people are always like, oh, what kind of sauce should I put on? Like you mentioned, I don't put anything. It's salt, sear. That is all you need on something that has such a superior quality. that you don't want to ruin something that good
by
drowning it in steak sauce, ketchup, whatever it is, you know, even Bernays, any type of sauce.
Well, you know, that's a great point. I was it was the corporate chef for a Chicago steakhouse restaurant group, and that was our big thing. You know, you're gonna have this great piece of meat, and then you're going to, you know, have marinades and sauces and everything else. We just simply, you know, it was salt, pepper, a little bit of olive oil, a little salt and pepper, and that was it. Let the meat speak for itself.
Exactly.
And then we had options. If somebody really wanted to have a sauce, we had sauces available. But let the meat speak for itself, especially when you have something so beautiful like this that's cured, that you've taken that process, you know, whether it be 30 days, 40 days, more or less.
Right.
You know, you don't really don't want to take that away. And it's also a challenge when you see, you know, like you've made a beautiful crust, a beautiful grill, and then somebody pours sauce over the top, and they're like, you just ruined it.
Yeah.
You just ruined all that work that, you know, get that caramelization, you have that Maillard effect, and then they pour sauce over the top, and you're like, oh.
Yep, you just ruined
that. This,
but I think that's with any ingredient, protein or not. If you get some high, good quality ingredients, I mean, again, like something like a lion's mane, it's not your traditional mushroom, but if taken care of and done properly, you don't need to do a whole lot because of the texture of it. Like
it does itself.
It does itself, right? Yep. All right, so we're toasting the rice, correct?
Correct.
And what's the reasoning behind doing that?
Just get a little bit more flavor. We'll get all the rice coated. So it's not going to stick together, and your end results will be a lot more creamier. But in the cooking process, some of that starch will develop.
Okay.
And so right now we're just getting that toastiness. You know, this is not a rice that we're going to. Oftentimes you hear about rice and rinsing it and soaking it, and we're not doing that with this arborio rice.
Right.
You know, the shorter grain.
Yeah. And then so also what I'm going to do with this, I figured it'd be good from a pairing and flavor profile. To do a little balsamic roasted Brussels sprout. I think it's going to pair well with, you know, a little sweetness from the balsamic to help offset some of that richness between the risotto and the steak. I just think it's going to give a good flavor balance. And it's one of my favorite ways to, again, I think it's another very underutilized vegetable that most people don't want to use, or they're intimidated. They see it and they just, I don't want to.
I tell you, you know, if you're a fan of Green City Market out there, up there in Lincoln Park, you can find the Brussels sprouts right on the stalk, which is really cool.
Yeah, and to do that, I mean, Brussels sprouts, usually you can get them trimmed right at the store, but all you do is you take off the little base, you know, depending on the size, cut them in half, remove a couple of those outer leaves. You know, that's part of my favorite is the loose leaves that get all crispy. Yep. They almost turn into like little chips.
So I'm gonna... Sometimes I almost like the leaves better than the Brussels sprout themselves because of that crispiness and that texture.
Something I want to try is to make like a Brussels sprout chip, you know, really low and slow and see how well it. So let's maybe talk about, you know, you mentioned the ACF team, you know, what that is, you know, for JJC at least this year.
Sure.
You know, what that entails, kind of the work they put into it and, you know, the results of where they are and getting ready to go to.
So the competitions for the specific for the students, they have a team competition, they have a student chef of the year, and they have a pastry chef, a student pastry chef of the year that they compete in. And so they have regionals, and then they have of the regionals, and they have four teams plus the military team.
Okay.
And so they competed, and in fact, they just, you don't need to earn a gold to go to the next level. You could have a bronze, go to the next level. It just depends on how many points are scored. So they competed against, I think it was either 12 or 19 other schools in the central region, and they came out on top.
Wow.
So, and then this is not, the menu that they're doing at National is not the menu. They have to start from scratch. They have to reinvent all their dishes.
Really?
Their coach, Chef Paul Bringus, just a fabulous guy, gets a lot of great support from Chef McGreal, who's the head of the program out there in Joliet. And but they have to start from scratch.
Wow.
And so what took them to the dance is not what gets them to the end. And their draw is actually this coming Tuesday. They start cooking at 6:20 in the morning. Can you imagine? And they do four courses. They have a really a great Dover sole appetizer dish. They have a beautiful a compressed watermelon dish. They have a beautiful lamb dish, and then they have a this exquisite dessert with I can't get into specifics. That's why I'm sounding so vague.
We don't want anyone to have know what they got.
But you know, that's a big thing. You know, competition is competition, but you don't want secrets out there, so to speak. Yeah. But it's so pulling these students. You get people that want the team is made up of it's all volunteer. Obviously Chef Ringus is the coach of the team and is an instructor. But as far as students, this is all their time, all their dedication. It's their want. So they all work. They all go to school full time, and they're on the team. So you really have to be dedicated and know that going in, hey, this is a part of what you're going to encounter. And that even means, getting to and from. It's a little bit of a challenge. As the example, they're at the school at 3:30 in the morning this Sunday to go to Phoenix. They're going to load the vans to get to Midway Airport. And then when they get there, there's meetings. On Mondays, there's meetings. There's a walkthrough. They get a little bit of sleep, and then they compete. But it's really a testament what the ACF does, including the students in these competitions. Mm-hmm. And hopefully they go on to compete professionally.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's...
Yeah, I can speak to the time and effort, because it was something I was interested in when I was at JJC. And after, it was like, this is the commitment. And it was up front. There was no gimmick of like, it was, this is how many hours you're going to put in a week.
Yep.
I just, at my age, I had to work, provide for myself. Yep. And it is a testament to the dedication that these students have. And again, it varies in age, right? It's not just 18-year-old
No,
students.
They go from early 20s to 40-ish.
Yeah.
And it's a love. It's really a dedication.
So what I did with these Brussels sprouts, just real quick, salt, pepper, oil, a little balsamic. I want a little sweetness as they cook and roast. Usually I'll just finish it with that. But if we need a little bit more, we can to help offset.
We're going to start adding our garlic and our onions here.
Okay.
Just give that flavor. And again, that's one of those principles of cooking that you use to incorporate with the risotto itself. Yeah, I'm not a garlic fan, but I love when it opens up and when it cooks.
Oh, yeah.
I'm a great roasted garlic fan, but I'm not so much a raw garlic. I think we don't use garlic the right way.
Yeah.
And, especially when it gets bitter and hot, it's just not.
No, it's not very good when it hits that point. So about how long are you sweating, these onions, garlic?
We're going to, the garlic opened up a little bit, so I start with the garlic.
Okay.
Then add the onion, and we want the onion to be a little bit translucent. We're not going to add all the onions on our board, but, we'll add, just enough.
Yep. So I don't bring my bench scrape the day I need it,
Yeah, right? I was thinking about that, but it's...
Actually, rinse your board real quick for you.
Thanks, Chef.
Yep. So while we're on the topic of competition. Yeah. This is something that always confused me, was the scoring, right? You said you don't need a gold in order to go to the next level.
Right.
Maybe explain what is, what is bronze, silver, gold, what does that actually mean?
So there, I don't remember the exact point totals, but you have to accumulate X amount of points, and it's from your floor judge, it's from the competition judges, from the tasting judges. The judging is blind. So when you bring the plates, when you present the plates, they don't know who's plate it is. They don't know. And it's not a competition. Like there's a first, there is, the grand winner is going to win the competition, right? Of those five entries for the school, school plus the military. So in that case, there's a winner. However, there's not, people always equate it to like a race where there's a first, second, and a third.
Mm-hmm.
And all theoretically, that's true. They can all win bronze, but there's only one winner. So who has the highest point total?
Right.
So that's how that's derived.
Got it. Okay. It's always a confusing topic people hear.
Well, yeah.
They didn't get a gold, but they're continuing on, or vice versa. They got a gold, but they're not moving on.
Yeah.
So that makes.
And maybe somebody, it's a 100-point system. So maybe somebody within that 100 points had you know, 1 point more. A couple years ago, maybe 3 years ago now, Joliet had a team, and they lost out the national championship by 12 thousandths of a point. Can you imagine?
I would. I don't know what I would do. I would probably.
It was a quiet ride home.
I bet. Let me pull that stock for you, just so you have it.
Do we have? We have a little bit of white wine, Chef.
Have what?
We have a little bit of white wine.
I don't actually.
Okay.
We'll have to go with. I was gonna get wine, but I figured most people at home aren't gonna have any wine.
Yeah. Okay.
Be careful, that is hot.
Yep.
And I may see if I've got a ladle as well.
That's beautiful.
That'll work, right?
So it's nice, and what people miss out on the podcast and what they miss out on YouTube is the smell. You know, you can just smell the arborio opening up. You smell that rice, the toastiness, the garlic, the onion. Like,
it's the best part. Well, that and the taste, right? They don't get to eat it. They get to see the eating, but they don't get to eat it.
But so far, you know, for the person at home, we haven't done anything that's complicated.
I don't think so.
It's really straight up simple. Everybody can chop garlic, cut an onion, toast off rice. You know, it's or the arborio. So,
and even if you don't have those knife skills, there's little tools out there now, right? Yep. You don't have to chop yourself. You can use a little dicer or chopper. I have garlic press at home. You know, when I'm lazy and I just don't want to do it, I'll run through the garlic press.
Look at the advent of TikTok Shop and Temu you know, all these little gadgets. So what we're doing, we're going to incorporate slowly by slowly. So I just added roughly two of these ladles in with the arborio. So now it's a process that you don't walk away from. And once the liquid is absorbed into the arborio, and then I'm going to add a little bit more.
Also, how much butter did you want to mount in at the end? I got parm.
It'd probably be like an ounce of butter.
Okay.
And again, we're going to be adding that fat at later when we add our cheese.
I want to get it ready to go.
We're turn down our heat just a little bit. So what I'm looking for here is the rice goes from, you know, kind of liquidy to creamy.
Okay.
So you want that starch really start to develop for it to absorb into the arborio. And like Chef has this... It's nice to have this wooden spoon to be able to stir the arborio with.
So how much stock have we added?
Yeah, we probably added 6 ladles to the stock. And one thing good to point out for our vegetarian friends is that you don't necessarily have to do with this with a protein stock, meaning a chicken stock or fish stock. You can use a vegetable stock would work out very well with this.
So I love it. A lot of restaurants, right? They have leftover asparagus, whatever. They'll use the stalks and put it in, and it, you know, enhances that. You know, it's now an asparagus risotto, and it truly embraces that. Or mushroom, like you said. One of my favorite is when they steep that into the stock and strain it out. It just gives it just another depth of flavor.
You know, back to the the line cook days of a restaurant. You know, you had your chicken stock, you had fish stock, you had beef stock, you had vegetable stock. You know, everything goes a la minute, and you had all those those I call them fun toys. To work with.
So I'm actually going to pull these steaks. We've had them in the water bath for probably at least an hour and a half, if not longer. Which again, depending on how big, how thick, all makes a difference on how long you'll need to actually sous vide a particular product.
And what's neat about the sous vide is you're not going to go over that designated temperature. And that's one of the positives about, not to mention a tender meat, but that steak too, you have to worry, well, you're concerned, but you really don't have to worry about overcooking it.
Right. No, I mean, and again, I think if they aren't already, a lot of restaurants are using technology. There's different technology that you don't have to do a water bath. They have, machines that actually sous vide like an oven. And, you know, that way when, someone orders a steak, they're all, medium rare. And then it's just a matter of how long you keep them on the heat, to finish them off.
And, not to sound like the old guy, but before these, the sous vide was more popular, you had the water on your stove and on your station and did the sous vide like that.
Yeah.
And then you just regulated. Sometimes you had to drop ice in the water, just kind of cool it down. But I guess what I'm saying is you don't necessarily have to have a circulator. It makes life a whole lot easier and easier to control. And like the one I have at home is Bluetooth control.
Oh yeah,
it's super cool because I could, I could see where it's at
all times.
Just looking at the app. So I don't want to discourage somebody from not trying something like this.
Well, it's great if you've got. I mean, again, you don't have to have fancy, you know, vacuum sealers, commercial sealers. You can use a home sealer, put in your favorite protein, chicken, whatever it might be, with butter, herbs, and drop it in, you know, with the sous vide. I mean, those machines now are $100. I mean, it's really not a inconvenience cost, in my opinion, to be able to throw something in and come back a couple hours later and, you know, maybe sear and finish it off. And, you know, you've got an excellent.
It's something as simple, too, as using a Ziploc bag if they have it. You just want to get the air out of the bag so it could sink, right? Because it has air in it. It's going to stay afloat. Right.
But how long are you thinking on that risotto?
Probably a few minutes out, at least.
Okay. I'm going to go ahead and sear these steaks. I'm going to just give them a hard, good sear. I've got the oven at 500 with the grill plate in it. And also going to throw in these Brussels sprouts, so they're going to get a roast. So it's like you never even knew it was going on. So we'll throw in the Brussels. Those are going.
And for those who don't know, Chef is using a Rationale oven with a sear plate on it. It's a phenomenal piece of equipment.
Yeah, the technology, you know, in the iCombi just allows you to control humidity where you want it. And to be honest, they built in, they you know, by chefs, for chefs. And so, you know, with that in mind, there's a button for almost anything. If you really want to do something, you can literally push a button and it will do exactly what you tell it to do, which is mind-blowing. But in today's world with labor shortages, you know, there's just a shortage of true culinarians because, in my opinion, or from what I've seen, is they get kind of gobbled up by the finer establishments. Mm-hmm. And then to feed the masses, it's, well, how do we feed the masses? Yeah. You know? And so companies have figured out, well, we have to introduce this technology. Otherwise, you know, we don't have the skilled labor to do this.
The tasting spoons.
I do. Got one there for sure.
Thanks, Chef.
We got a whole box. So taste as you go. Very important. So,
yeah, we're almost there. It obviously, you haven't seen me put in the salt or the pepper yet. We'll get there. Just kind of tasting to see how the grain is. And how I like risotto, and how about you, Chef? I like a little bit of bite to the risotto.
Yeah, I mean, a little al dente. I mean, I'd rather be that than mush.
Yeah, I don't want it raw in the center with the grain, but I want something that has texture to it.
Right. And so on our steaks, I'm literally getting a sear on it. That's all I'm working on. I don't want, you know, it's where I really want it from a, you know, temperature, internal temp. So it's literally just enough to sear it, get a beautiful crust, hair longer.
Smells fantastic.
Oh, yes. And then we'll make a couple plates of the risotto.
So if someone were cooking at home, they could, again, like a restaurant, they could take the risotto, cook it to the halfway point, and then when it came time, say they made it today for tomorrow, just because we're on those busy schedules, they can take that risotto, put it in the pan with that stock and just keep feeding it into it.
Yep.
And you have your risotto versus, you know, taking all this time. You know, you can, that's a shortcut that works.
Right. So I got the steaks pulled out, and as you can see, I just wanted to get a sear or crust on there. You know, and the beauty thing also with sous vide is they don't really need to rest because you're not losing anything. All of that myoglobin is staying inside the juice that you want, not blood, as everyone, you know, thinks that it is. So
common misconception, right, Sean?
It is. So I'm just waiting for those Brussels to finish up, which again, we're just getting a good roast on them. Good color. 500, it shouldn't take too long. As much as you need, or as little.
Thanks, Chef.
Cheese.
So we're just about there on the risotto. It's getting really nice and creamy. And we'll give it a taste just to see where the grains are at. So like I said, a little bit flat on flavor right now. But we're going to add, you know, we're going to add the salt, the pepper, the butter, the Parmesan.
Right.
If you were to make this and add mushrooms, you would be folding in your mushrooms. Or if you wanted to fold in spinach or number of things you could, could put in there. But you're not starting off with that. You're adding that at the end.
At the end, right. Yeah. You're adjusting that flavor profile to match up exactly what you want.
When we finish here, I'll have the burner figured out.
Yeah. It took me quite some time to figure out what levels to put things. You know, I'm like, I'm going to sear it. And there's a sear mode. Well, if you put it on sear mode, it is turbo, and it will sear things in literally seconds and end up burning your food, Brussels.
Oh.
Just a good char on them. Get a shot for the camera.
I'm glad charring has come in vogue now, because I love charred vegetables. My wife loves charred vegetables. It's not burnt, folks. It's charred. It's
flavor.
That flavor. Oh, my goodness.
It's flavor.
And you're putting a little bit of balsamic glaze over that, and it just enriches that sweetness. And
yeah. I mean, look at that.
Oh.
Just a gorgeous. I mean, and it just cuts like butter. Like, you barely have to do.
And I think that's a great point that you bring up, Chef, about the resting. Because I think that's something that people will realize at home when they use traditional methods of cooking a steak or a roast. They don't let it rest enough.
Right.
And or even brisket, you know, barbecuing is so popular now that they don't let that brisket rest enough. You have to let the brisket, you know, rest for half hour, hour.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I did one. I can't remember what I did. And I wrapped it and put it in a cooler and let it sit for, I don't even know how long it was. It was hours, you know, just to try and help it absorb.
So now we're at that point that we can doctor it up a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
A little salt, a little pepper. We're using a coarse kosher salt.
Yep.
Versus using, you know, the regular commercial iodized salt. It's better. It's cleaner. It's healthier.
Just tastes better too.
Better mouthfeel.
Yeah. It. There's so many types of salt now, right? It's almost become its own thing. Yep. Between flaky salt, finished salt. You know, all the different types of salt.
So I have this the burner on low.
Okay.
So we're just incorporating. Now the butter will incorporate the cheese, and then we'll put in our parsley. But mentioning about cooking risotto ahead of time, again, you don't want to add the cheese and the butter until you're finished, right? So you don't want to introduce those things. And why? Because the cooking, it'll impede the cooking process, and as well as you'll probably burn your risotto. So I guess we've got about a cup's worth of Parmesan in there.
Okay. And it was in to start, it was a cup of risotto. Like you said, it goes a long way. Yeah. It is very rich. It's very, you know, delicate. You don't want to eat a ginormous bowl of risotto.
No.
Oh, man.
There, we any adjustment either way, salt, pepper, anything?
Mine's good. Yeah. You know, and again, that's the beauty of cooking at home. You can create as salty as you want, you know, as peppery as you want,
yeah.
Whatever you, it's your palate and flavor profile. And if you've got a family, you know, you can make your, you know, the, kind of the base, and then, you know, allow the family members to add,
right, absolutely,
you know, extra seasoning or whatever it is that they want to the dish.
And for the screen, or for the people watching this, you could see how creamy, really luscious.
So we're going to take this. Then what I think we're going to do is add a little yum yum steak on top, right over the center there. We'll put a little side of some Brussels right there.
Incredible.
And again, don't be afraid to try things at home. That's, you know, I stress it enough that the stuff seems intimidating. It looks, oh my gosh, this is so difficult. It's not.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's easy.
You're going to see it live here. You know, what we did, we're going to put the recipe, how easy it is. There's all sorts with technology, the amount of YouTube videos and things you can watch as you're cooking, literally with your phone right next to you. So I don't have any spoons for that risotto, but I've got forks. So,
and, you know, and we're not, you know, we've been doing this a long time, but even for those who haven't, don't think that we haven't made our mistakes.
Oh,
and it might take you a couple times to get that risotto down to cook it properly, but it's not super, the components aren't that expensive. I mean, the steak is expensive. But you can cook, you know, you can cook a steak, and those who don't necessarily have that skill set, you'll get there. Don't be discouraged. Be encouraged.
Give that steak a try. Incredible. Depth of flavor.
Wow.
So you've got that nutty earthiness with the steak, the salt. You've got creaminess from the risotto and it's in beef stock. And then you got a little sweetness or more with the Brussels sprouts, kind of balances, you know, the whole dish out with a little char, just a simple, easy dish.
And you see that the portions, you know, it's a rich plate, but you know, and too, for cost efficiency, what you're doing at home, you know, you're looking at all the components, and that's how, when we build menus in restaurants, that what we think about that. You think about the plate conceptually, and how does that work?
Right.
So, and it's different. Like I said, steakhouse, if you're there for that 8-ounce filet, or you're there for that 14-ounce ribeye, or paddle stake or whatever it is, and that's different. But when you're coming with a composed dish like this, mm-hmm. you're not going to walk away not satisfied. You're going to walk away very satisfied because all the components have a balance.
Right.
And that's what you want. You know, at the end of the day, you want that balance.
It's balanced and it's unprocessed, unrefined foods. Mm-hmm. Right. The body's naturally going to say, I'm full. This is, you know, nourishing food versus some of the ultra processed foods that are out there. They're designed to make you want to eat more. Mm-hmm. Right. They kind of trick the body. Whereas this, you know, again, and from a sensory Again, just eating this little bowl, it's like perfect. Like I've got a meal, like I don't need anything else.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe some more steak, you know, after I get done, of course. All right, Chef. What are we going to move on to next? And then we got a couple other things that you wanted to work on.
Maybe take this to the side. So we've got... we'll have the salmon. Matter of fact,
I was going to say, what do you want, the oven or do you want to?
You know, like, I'm really encouraged. You know, I will actually give you the salmon.
Okay.
So we're just looking for a, excuse me, a sear on the salmon.
Okay.
And I think that using the technology with the rationale would fit in.
Okay.
Because not that we're challenged, but, you know, we just have one hot plate burner.
Right.
And I think this would really set up well.
Okay.
If you would just take the salmon.
Sure.
So what we've done here with the potato is we have something called it's along the line of a pavé, a French term for like a paving stone. That's where it originated. But it's multiple layers of potato. You take heavy cream and you steep that with some garlic cloves, some thyme, a little bit of salt and pepper, and let that bring it up to a simmer, and then let that pick up flavors for about a half hour. And then in a parchment-lined pan, you'll make these potato layers, and then you'll put it in the oven. Not pressed yet. There's a pressing process, but you'll take the tureen, if you will, and you'll put it in the oven at 330 for 2 hours. When it comes out of the oven, then you'll put a pan on top of the pan, so you press them, and then that'll set overnight. And then the next day, you cut out these pieces, these pavés, and then we're going to reheat it with a little bit of oil and butter.
Okay. So yeah. You just want to sear on the salmon?
Yeah. Yeah, but that can, you know, we can wait on that.
Okay, I didn't know how long your potatoes were going
to. Yeah, the components are going to take longer than the salmon.
Okay.
You know, it's nice, especially, you know, when you have, you know, beautiful, crisp salmon, you know, you're only cooking that to, you know, like a medium rare.
Right.
And again, you know, with what we talked about with, you know, presentation, you know, you don't have to get into the heavier sauces, and there's nothing wrong with that, but... You know, it's dry. You know, we want a little bit of fresher, lighter for garnish. I have some flower petals, some Italian parsley leaves, some lemon zest. I've got some pickled shallot. But we're not going to overcomplicate this.
Okay.
Reheating the potatoes are going to take longer than cooking the salmon. And for those wondering, I am using a farm-raised salmon. I know there's you know, wild caught farm. But I, you know, I know that, you know, in dealing with the vendors that, farm raised shouldn't get the bad reputation that it does. Mm-hmm. You know, I think they're really doing a great job because we, as people, are not being responsible for our waters. You know, when you look at Atlantic salmon, it almost has to be farm raised now because we fished out the waters. We've got a big problem in Asia with, overfishing the waters.
Right.
And, they've really come a long way, because it did not have a good reputation as far as farm-raised fish. Period. If people have a chance, right in Wisconsin, there's Rushing Water, and it's a trout farm. It's absolutely beautiful. You can even go fishing there if you want.
Wow!
But they've got a little restaurant there, and they'll talk you through the process of what the trout goes through from start to finish, and all the different I'll call them beds that they have to in there from the fish growing and to purging and everything. It's really it's fascinating. It's a fascinating process. But if you didn't know, you wouldn't know that it's a farm-raised fish.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, technology's come so far. These farms are getting more sophisticated in their techniques, mm-hmm. and like you said, the general public all here is, you know, it's farm raised or it's this or it's that, so it must be bad.
Yeah. Or what, you know, what are they giving the fish to eat and everything? You know, even when you look at again going back to like Meats by Lins, Fred Lins, you know, he's farming his own cattle. You know, he knows everything mm-hmm. about that cattle.
Right.
He has his own ranch, or they have, you know, as a company, they have their own ranch. Meats by Lins has been around for a long time. But I think as time has passed, you really see, and we become more aware of farm to table. I think, you know, these vendors are really a lot more responsible and into the whys of what we're raising versus just doing massive production.
Right.
And there's that still happens, right? You're never going to get away from that. But, you know, when you work, you know, when you know where you're shopping, you know who you're shopping from, it really makes a big difference that they actually care about the life of the animal.
Right.
And they care how it's being treated. And PETA has made that us aware of that to a degree. But I think the vendors have really come a long way as far as their own responsibility of how they treat, you know, something gave up their life for us to eat. Right.
Well, and I think the generations coming up, that's it's on the forefront of their mind. They mm-hmm. want to know these things and what the consumer demands. Right. You know, the industry must adapt.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're going to get left behind. And so I think that's the big push is to know where your food is coming from.
Yeah.
And you know, even though it's farm raised, not, you know, fresh fished, not all fresh fishing is good practices either.
Right.
You know,
exactly. Yeah, that's a misconception, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, but you know, they have marketing tools for that to portray a positive image, and you know, good or bad or indifferent, they do that to
right,
some degree.
Right.
And I get it, but so what we're doing with this mushroom, we're just going to take nice slices. I actually made a compressed lion's mane. Salad a couple weeks ago.
Interesting.
Just tasting fresh vegetables. I oven roasted for 24 hours some tomatoes at home. I made some preserved lemon and, you know, kind of Mediterranean kind of thing.
Yeah.
But the lion's mane mushroom really picks up a lot of flavor.
It does. It absorbs everything.
Yes. And that was really cool to have taking all these components, compress it. And what I mean by compressing, I take the air out because I do have one of those vacuum sealers at home. But it's nothing, again, you couldn't do in a Ziploc bag, right? This is, you know, a little bit more in depth of a flavor, but just the same, these are mushrooms are a great vehicle for picking up flavor.
Yep.
And they still have a little chew to them. You know, it's not mush. They still have a little bit of body.
No, they have a great body. You know, shout out to Windy City Mushrooms. We're going to be going out there and actually going to their farm
mm-hmm.
In a couple weeks to shoot an episode. And you know, see how they're produced in their facility here up here in Chicago.
Sure.
But John came on, you know, and kind of we went through how, you know, there's so many ways that you can use these. And you know, to my surprise, it was amazing to see, you know, that it mimicked a steak and how it still had meatiness and that texture. And to your point, again, there's so many. It's not just for the vegan anymore. It's, you know, how do you take these really good products and incorporate it into the everyday diet, yeah. right? Even your own. But I think people are just intimidated. They see this big fuzzy mushroom and they go, I don't know what to do.
And I like the fact, you know, as much as I say, I'm not really a Food Network fan. I think they have had a role in educating the general consumer, which I think is good. I think, you know, where my dislike comes from in these setup competitions that, you know, like Chopped is a 16-hour photo shoot. That's not a real competition.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to see a real competition, go to ACF competition, like the students are doing next week. But I think with all the choices that we have, and even with social media, TikTok and everything else, Pinterest, it goes on and on,
right?
Of, you know, what's the first thing people do when they get their food? They're taking out their cameras to take a picture.
Mm-hmm.
It's what we do,
right?
So one of the things I'm doing with this mushroom, I introduced, yes, I do have a little bit of oil in there. But I also have butter. So why did I add butter? Well, for flavor number one, and number two, for the lactic acid in the butter helps break down the mushroom. So it'll help tenderize a little bit.
Extra plate when you need to put those down.
We're probably, if you're more familiar with that rationale, we're probably, you know, 4 or 5 minutes off on this. So how long do you think that salmon will take in the rationale?
At 500, not long. It'll probably take
a couple, 3 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a sear, let it cook. You'll be able to see the cook through the side and then give it a flip.
So one of the things that we're going to do, we'll get started on our decoration here. So we've got a little pomegranate molasses glaze. And then we've got some dill oil. So dill will go with the salmon. So when we make the dill oil, it's just as simple as taking some salted water, blanching it for 15 seconds, throwing it in an ice bath. So you need about 2 cups of herbs.
Okay.
And 3/4 cup or so cup of olive oil or safflower oil, and blend it for a few minutes, literally, then strain it. And then you have your byproduct is the oil. Really simple, but a nice healthy alternative, again, to having those sauces. So we're just going to add some drops around there. Get a nice color on our mushroom.
Oh, it's gorgeous. Now, if somebody wants to get involved with the ACF, you know, what's the best next steps, right? They watch this, they see, you know, okay, we talked about ACF. Where do they go? What do they do to join, to learn more?
Sure. So there's we have monthly meetings as far as the Chicago chapter. If you're in Chicago or in any of the major cities, there's chapters. And how do you find that out? You can go to acfchefs.org.
Okay.
That's our parent site. That's our parent organization. If you're in the Chicago area, it's acfchicagochefs.org. And then you'll see our meetings. We have a meeting coming up at the end of the month, and we talk about sous vide. We're always, you know, we're being very pro-educational forward. And then depending on, you know, there's layers of membership, whether it's a high school student, a college student, it's just somebody, a culinarian. Mm-hmm. You know, the misnomer is that you have to be a chef to belong to your organization, which isn't true. You can just be somebody that loves food, somebody that's passionate, and they can join your organization.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So I'm going to, if you can hand me a paper towel and dab this a little bit.
Yep.
So before it goes on the plate, we're just going to dab it a little bit so we don't carry the grease. And Chef, if you want to get that salmon started. In.
Sure thing.
As far as shopping, you know, you have the gentleman on from the mushroom farm. I bought the mushroom from Pete's. I love Pete's Market.
I don't know if those are the Pete's yet or not, but I know they're in all the Fresh Times.
Yeah.
They're in all 70.
I'm just saying as far as this availability.
Oh, yeah. You can get it anywhere.
It just, you know, when you went to the store, it was everybody, you know, always bought domestic. And holy cow, there's cremini and there's portobello and there's oyster mushrooms out there now. And then, mm-hmm. you know, there's lion's mane. And it just, you know, they're popular, you know.
They
it's
are.
It's good for you. It's popular. It's more available. But, you know, for the process of this demo, I just went to Pete's Market.
It's that easy.
Pick them up.
Local
you know,
market.
It's not like, oh my gosh, how do I get in touch with these guys? How do I buy mushrooms? I'm really interested in it. Now what?
Yeah, it's very, very simple nowadays to get a hold of a lot of this, given the way that, you know, grocery and distribution has gone. And again, customers are demanding it. It's becoming more mainstream. Right. And it's allowing it to get into the stores.
Well, and they wouldn't carry it if it didn't make money.
Exactly.
That's business, right? We all know that. If it's not going to make them money, they're not going to carry it.
Exactly.
I wish organics would go that direction because, you know, we all thought that when Walmart got into the business of organics, it would really help out the industry, not to mention the domestic buyer, but it really hasn't worked out like that. But.
Yeah, organics is it's a tough one.
How close are we?
Maybe a minute, okay, awesome. Minute and a half out on the salmon.
So we're just going to dab this potato on the paper towel a little bit so you have a nice clean finish and you don't have that grease on the plate. And then we'll do the same thing with the mushroom. And then when we do the salmon, we'll just put the salmon up here.
Perfect. What is that you're putting on now?
Just some flower petals. I picked up some edible flowers at Pete's. Just for, you know, a little decoration, just to kind of take it to that next level. So we've got the flower petals here We've got some of the Italian parsley, right? Because, you know, we eat with our eyes. And again, this stuff is readily available. Beautiful. So we're just going to take some of our pickled shallot.
And what did you pickle that in?
A little bit of cider vinegar, some of the pomegranate glaze, and a little bit of sugar.
Okay.
It's just a simple cure. And that's
wow.
Our plate.
Wow. That's incredible.
So, you know, nothing that you can't do at home. And you know, it looks nice. You know, you pick it up, you know, to the next level. And just, you know, putting a piece of salmon on the plate with some meat and potatoes, right?
Exactly.
Just meat and potatoes, and it's elevated.
Right. So you can go from, you know, the simple, we did risotto, steak, again, very yeah. Simple procedures. You start to work your way up. Again, learn, educate yourself. Donna, you've been talking about education and keep growing, developing. What I love, again, because again, I went to JJC, so give them a shout out, is there's even courses that if you just want to learn, you can take one-off courses. You don't have to go for a full education and get your associates in culinary. You can go if you want to know more about baking and pastry.
Yeah.
Take the class. Learn more about it.
There's even a class on plate presentation.
Exactly.
It's as simple as that. And again, the baking offerings you know, it's not necessarily for the professional. It's for everybody.
Right.
And they make it very easy to understand and very attainable.
Right. Don, any last words before we wrap this thing up?
I appreciate this opportunity. This is fantastic. I love listening to you, and I love watching the videos. This is fantastic. And then just to have this opportunity, I can't thank you enough.
Awesome. Thank you so much. So we'll put all in its recipes as much as we can in the show notes. We'll put all the links. So if you want to learn more about ACF or how to get more education, we'll also put that in the notes. So until next time, we'll catch you on the sunny side.
HospitalityChain.com, the world's first online hub designed for the hospitality, culinary, and catering industry. From leading food and beverage brands to professional food service equipment, HospitalityChain.com makes sourcing simple. Search, select, buy direct, and save all in one global marketplace.